left off yesterday, we were talking about this potential scenario of being mazik somebody through water. So what would the case be exactly? So Tosfos was searching for what would this theoretical case of mazik mayim be. So Tosfos referred us to the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin, where the Gemara talks about not damaging through water, but actually killing somebody through water. And the Gemara differentiates between whether a person kills somebody derech karech rishon or karech sheni. The case being that there's a river, there's a valley of water that has a dam, and I take my friend or my enemy and I put him next to the body of water, I tie him down, and then I open up the dam. So I cause the water to come. The question is that called the rotzech biyadayim or not? So obviously I'm a rotzech, and Dini Shemai, of course I'm a rotzech. But in terms of Beis and Shemata, am I called someone who actively killed somebody, or did I do it so indirect, so derech rama, that wouldn't be labeled as ritzicha? So the Gemara differentiated between karech rishon and karech sheni, and the question is, what does that mean? So whatever it means by ritzach, says Tosfos, that's what it means by mazik as well. If you damage somebody derech karech rishon, you chayav. If you damage somebody derech karech sheni, then you pot, that's called the grama. So how do you know whether something is karech rishon or karech sheni? So yesterday we focused on Rashi Shita. Now we began to, at the very end of the show, we began to focus on the Yad Rama Shita. So in order to understand what karech rishon karech sheni is, the Yad Rama tells us we have to go back to another sugya Masechet Sanhedrin. Let's just take a look quickly back at that Gemara again, the fifth of the Bar Mikomos. And I enzayin him evayz, v'am arav azark chayt utris biyado, if I shoot an arrow, and the other person is holding a shield, when somebody comes and removes the shield, even if I go ahead and I beat the arrow and I remove the shield, potter, t'b'idna d'shad d'be mefsek peske gireh. At the time that I shot the arrow, I can't be called a Ratzeach, because the person had the shield there. So at that time, that's not a Maisa Ratzicha. The question is, why can't the removal of the shield be called an act of Ratzicha? An arrow is coming, heading at the person's heart, and I go ahead and I yank the shield away, so aren't I a Ratzeach? So the answer is no, I'm not a Ratzeach. Yeah, a nice guy I'm not, but I'm not a Ratzeach B'Yadayim, because I didn't actively kill the person. I simply did what the poskim coined a phrase, hasaras hamonea. I removed something that's preventing the person from getting hurt. So by doing so, it's a terrible thing, but an act of ritzicha, it's not. So ask the Yad Rama, if you're going to tell me that hasaras hamonea, removing a barrier, is not an act of ritzicha, so how could the Gemara say that removing the dam is an act of ritzicha? What's the difference between the person who yanks away the shield, who's potter, and the person who opens up the dam, who's chayav? They're both examples of removing something that's preventing the murder weapon. In one case, the murder weapon is the arrow. In the other case, the murder weapon is the water. So comes the Yad Rama, a little long, long piece in the sixth of the Mar Makomos, if it gives us an insight as to what's going on. So we take a look at the Yad Rama. The first one line is Shalkeshes. It's about 10 lines down or so. 9, 10 lines down. First one line is Shalkeshes. So in the middle of that line, to the period, behind it to come Rapapa. When Rapapa says that removing the dam is considered to be Gira Dideinenu, Umichayim, it's considered to be your arrows. V'lodamya hamilsa. The case of the dam is not similar to the case of Azarkbo, Chetz, Utris Biyado. To the other case of removing the shield, what's the difference? The ilu hasam, in the case of removing the shield from the shot arrow, ki salke le tris, when are you removing the tris, when are you removing the shield? Mekame de nimte gira legabehu de slike. Obviously, you are removing the shield before the arrow has arrived. Imagine as follows, two different scenarios. He has the victim, and he has a shield on him, so I shoot the arrow. So somebody can remove that shield one of two times. Either you can remove the shield way before the arrow reaches its target, or you can remove the shield as the arrow hits the shield. So says the Yad Rama, I don't know too much about archery, but one thing I can tell you is that if you remove the arrow if you remove the shield when the arrow hits it, the guy's not going to die. Nothing's going to happen. It means all the whole force of the arrow has just been done. It's just been completed. It's just been prevented by the shield. So there's no question that if we're talking about a fellow dying, obviously, the shield was removed well before the arrow made contact. That makes all the difference in the world, says the Yad Rama, that since the arrow has not yet made contact with the shield, so therefore we can view the two as two separate entities. There's a shield and there's an arrow. When I remove the shield, I'm not touching the arrow. The arrow's only in. The arrow, if you want to make it more into the 21st century, it's a missile. The missile is 1,000 miles away. So I removed the Iron Dome and everybody. So I removed the quote unquote the shield, and now the missile comes and attacks. There's no connection at all between my maaseh and the murder weapon. Says the Adrama, the Ela Bosad the Matlaga Besris, if you didn't remove the shield until the end, Afakam the Hafiz Masakla the Tris, Sulav Azogiritve, Flavi Mikdal. So then, if the case is not the way I'm describing, if you're going to argue that the fellow removed the shield when the contact was already made, nothing would have happened. The arrow would just fall down to the floor, the person wouldn't have died. Elavade al Korchach, obviously, the Metzia says, so that's obvious, says the Yad Rama. And now, ulamatul hachi potur. So now I understand why the fellow is potur. The chisalkeik is at the moment that I remove the shield, lav mi di oven, nothing happened. My amros, what are you going to tell me? Sov chetz lovo? You're going to tell me that the arrow's on the way? Ha'amran kosov horig lovo potur, the grami amu, that's called the grama. Aval hocha, in the case of the water, the chisalke la'afra, the mafsik ben maya l'didei, maya havunagi bel afra gufe, says the Adrama, when I remove the dirt, which is the dam that he's referring to, I remove the dam, I remove the dirt, so that dirt is touching the water. So the water and the dirt are considered to be one entity. Kisalka the offa, when I remove the dirt, giri di dehu, v'amato hochi chayav. Says the Adrama, it's not a question of, is something happened immediately or does something happen later? That's not the point. That's not like, that's what Rashi said yesterday. Said the Adrama, what matters is the physical proximity between the shield and the murder weapon. If the two are literally hugging, they're touching, they're kissing one another, the dirt and the water are hainuach, they fuse to become one cheftza, they become one entity, so then I am using this entity as a murder weapon. By removing the dirt, I am halachically called bringing the water. Mashenke, in the case of the shield, since the two are so far apart from one another, when I remove the shield, I'm knowing the arrow's not coming for another 20 minutes, that's not considered to be an act of ritzicha.
He shot the arrow.
Right, but the two different entities. I shot the very long the shavur. I shot the arrow. You can't call him a rotzeh for shooting the arrow because there's a shield there protecting the person. The removing of the shield, but you can't call him a rotzeh for that because the arrow's not here. So you're right. If you do the math and add it up, the guy's rotzeh. In Bezin Shamata, they do the math. But in Bezin Shamata, sorry, potter plus potter equals potter in Bezin Shamata. So now comes the Yad Ramah and elaborates upon his pshat. And now he says, and now I can understand. Take a look at the back page. Now we understand what the interesting kach rishon and kach sheni is. Klomar, heichad the mayis machmas maya the also be kach rishon. If the person dies because of the water that was touching the dam, kisalkal midam the masik benem hainu maya to be karmi duchtayu b'shas chilucha davar. But any water that was not touching the dam, so says the Adrama, now that I just explained to you that what really matters is, it's not a question of time, what really matters is point of contact. Now I understand this distinction between Kach Rishon and Kach Sheni. Kach Rishon is describing the water that's touching the dam. Kach Sheni is the water that's not touching the dam. So the Ramah's got a gevaldik pshat. The only problem with this pshat is that he thinks that the Metzius is not right. Why is the Metzius not right? He then goes on to elaborate upon his problem with his Metzius. A very, very long deshavot. Because we have a cup of water over here. We have water that's on the top and water that's on the bottom. Yesh lachot, salam de shechakira, is this one cheftza of mayim? All the water that's touching one another is one entity? Or do I say no? There's the water on top, and there's next line. We all know scientifically there are a lot of molecules of water here, but that's not really the question that interests us. We want to know halachically, do we view this as one cheftza now? What's the difference? It makes all the difference in the world. According to his shtickle Torah, that time doesn't really matter. Distance doesn't really matter. Delayed mechanism doesn't really matter. The only thing that matters is the cheftza that you are touching the cheftza that's doing the killing. That's all that matters. That's the issue, according to the Yad Ramah. So how can I tell you a story now? Well, if it's Kvachsheini, if it's water that's 100 feet away, no, that's okay. That's not called the same Cheftza, because each drop of water is different, says the Adramah. I don't believe that's true. Says the Adramah, halachically, the body of water is one entity. So if I yank away the dam and now the river starts flowing, it doesn't matter whether it's water that was touching the dam or it's water that's further upstream. The water upstream is also halachically touching the dam because it's all one Cheftza, so one entity. If that's true, says the Adramah, then the entire pshat just went up in smoke. Because the entire pshat of the Ramah was based on the fact that the critical component is, am I touching something that's touching the cheftz of the murder weapon? Once you tell me that all water is one entity, then by definition I always am. And then the distinction between Koch Rishon and Koch Sheni becomes irrelevant. So because of this problem, the Yad Ramah makes an about face. He turns his entire pshat on its head. And he says, we don't have the right pshat anymore. He says, it can't be the pshat. So what is the pshat? Now they just rejected his first pshat. So what is the pshat? So comes the Yad Ramah and explains that the Ikal HaFerusha, the third line for the top. The Ikal HaFerusha, there are those who give a different pshat. V'hani mila b'koch rishon, shamayim hayordim b'shah shepinel hen derech, lo amdu ad shi'igil l'rosh ha'kofos. Aval im amdu b'derech machmas dover she'ikval v'sovdim shkubil leyen v'holkul av gyrdi deinin hu. Says the Yad Ramah, you want to know what makes something koch rishon, what makes something koch sheni? It has nothing to do with proximity, nothing to do with time, nothing to do with touching. It has to do with, is it still in the same force, or has something stopped it and has it picked up on its own? If I open up the dam and water comes shooting down, it could take an hour, it could take a year. If that water eventually comes down and kills the person, I'm a rotzech b'yadayim. The only thing that can be mafkia, the only thing that can remove the shame rotzech b'yadayim, is if the water stopped somewhere along the way. The water is coming down, and now it's overflowing, and falls into there's a pit by the edge of the river. It falls to the pit, and it stops. And now, eventually, within time, more water comes and eventually pushes that water out, but there was a clear stop in the movement of the water, and then, in a sense, started up on its own. That's called grama. That's called koch sheni. That's the only case of koch sheni. But, says the Yad Ramah, as long as there's an ongoing flow, it doesn't matter how long of a break there is, that is not called grama, that is called koach rishon. And that's the pshat that ultimately the Ramah accepts. So there are really three different versions here as to what this magic koach rishon, koach sheni is. Now again, we're not really learning the sugi v'rtzeach, we're really learning the sugi v'nezikin, but we're using the sugi v'rtzeach to model after. So what is it that makes something your maisa, and what is something that doesn't make something your maisa? So according to Rashi, if I start the ball rolling and things happen very, very quickly, that's called my maisa. If there's any delay whatsoever, it doesn't matter what, where, if there's a delay mechanism, that's not called my maisa. That's Rashi's understanding of koch rishon, koch sheni. The Ramah's first version of koch rishon, koch sheni is, it depends on the two items halachically touching one another. According to the second shot of the Ramah, they're always touching one another. The water is always touching one another. What matters is it a direct flow or was there actually a stop along the way? So why is all of this important for us? I mean, it's important for us because we have to learn sugyas in Bava Kamma, learn sugyas in Sanhedrin. This becomes part of the discussion, Bizman Hazeh, about the whole institution of grama. Now, most of us aren't asking shalas of grama ritzicha, we hope, or grama zikin. When we talk about grama, we think more in terms of grama and Shabbos. The Gemara tells us in the 16th back of Shabbos, lo sasekom alocha, asiya also grama mutar, that grama is permissible on Shabbos. Now, many of the Rishonim watered that a little bit, that when the Gemara says that grama mutar, so it doesn't mean it's absolutely outright mutar. The original context that the Gemara was talking about was, if there's a fire raging, and I want to be able to put out the fire, again, assuming there's no pekoch nefesh, I just want to protect my property, the post can write that bezman hazeh, all fires are considered to be suffer pekoch nefesh. Our houses are too close for comfort. In the olden days, a person lived down on the farm somewhere, so they got everybody out of the house. So the house burned down, sure, no one's going to get hurt. Bezman hazeh, our houses are too close to one another to make any distinction. So we treat all fires bezman hazeh as a suffer pekoch nefesh. Rabbi Ribiyat has a huge sefer in Hilchos Shabbos, thousands and thousands of pages. It gives you every single mocha for every single statement that he writes. So and when he gets to this piece about fires b'zman hazeh, so he says that fires b'zman hazeh are treated as suffik ruach nefesh. They have to be put out. You have to call the fire department, the fire, whatever has to be done to put out the fire properly, just get it done. And he quotes on the back as a source, he writes, the Rockland County Fire Department. That's his Mayim Makom. So he lives in Muncie. But in the old days, when fire wasn't necessarily Pekuach Nefesh, if you get everybody out of the house, the house is gonna burn down. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about possibly putting out the fire. There are grumas. It was a whole convoluted way. I pour the water not directly on the fire, I pour the water over here, the water hits the bucket. Whole different story, how to put out the fire. So it's in that context that the Gemara says grumah mutter. So there are many Rishonim of the opinion that the Gemara never meant to say that grumah is mamish mutter. The Gemara just meant to say, in the case where your house is burning down, then grumah is mutter. Or in some other equivalent of some very, very extenuating circumstances, then grumah is mutter. Normally, grumah is also at least mid the Rabbanan. That's what many Rishonim say. Some Rishonim say no. Some Rishonim say that grumah is mutter. The Gemara says grumah is mutter means it's mutter. It's hetter grumah. So we pask at the halacha like the machmir. The Ramah writes in the Shabbos that our practice is the first view of Rishonim, that we would never permit grumah outright unless to prevent your house from burning down or some other extenuating circumstances. Other examples of extenuating circumstances are situations of cholim, situations of other kinds of big hefsed mamons, other kinds of very, very big machon mitzvah, things of those nature. Those are considered in the halacha to be equivalent of extenuating circumstances. That's how we pass it in the halacha. Grum is not outright mutter. Grum is mutter if and when it meets those certain circumstances that are acceptable to rely on grumma. But anytime we want to rely on grumma, we have to make sure that what we're dealing is really grumma. How do you know that any given device is really grumma, not a ma'isa b'yadayim? So you have to learn the sugyas of grumma. So that's where all the discussion is. So all the posts can discuss this sugya in Masechet Sanhedrin, this Tosfos, this Yad Ramah. This is the source for everything that goes into grumma discussions. Is any given device grumma or not? So if you go with Rashi's view that all you have to do to create grumma is, in a sense, a time delay. So I press a button. So if the malach happens immediately, that's not called grumma. Let's say, for example, I turn on a light switch. So the light goes on instantaneously. So according to Rashi, that's not grumma. How could that be grumma? But I, even though I'm not touching the light bulb, I'm touching the switch, but it's happening mamish a split second later. So that's called biadayim. That's not called grumma. What about according to the Yad Ramah? So according to the Yad Ramah, even if there would be a delay, that wouldn't necessarily constitute grumma, unless, the way the Yad Ramah concludes, unless there was a break in the action, there was something that, I set something into motion, like I remove the dam, and I set the water into motion, and then the water mamish stops. And then the water picks up on its own koach and starts the malach over again, that's called grumma. But if there's an ongoing flow, nothing stopped, nothing changed, so that's not called grumma. That's considered to be mamash ma'isa b'yadayim. That's what Reb Chaim Oizer has a tshuva. Reb Chaim Oizer lived, he was the Rav in Vilna before the war. So he said, God l'ador, not just the Rav of Vilna. So the Reb Chaim Oizer has a tshuva about electricity. So it's a fascinating background to the tshuva about electricity, because they were chepering Reb Chaim Oizer to write a whole piece of one of the Torah journals all about electricity. So Reb Chaim Oizer writes in his tshuva, he writes a very short tshuva, and he writes that he knows he's being bothered by people to write this long, long piece about all the issues involved with electricity, and he refused to write it. He says, why don't I want to write it? He says, because the Torah journal is going to be read by everybody. It's going to be on the street. People are going to put it, I don't know if they put it in all the shuls and Shabbos morning like we do today, but so it's going to get out onto the world. Chaim Moses says, everybody knows, it was already in the 1920s, everybody knows electricity is also Shabbos. It's already been discussed for 20 years before. All the parts are nimnu v'gomru, that electricity is absolutely also belishum sofek on Shabbos. So he writes, so what am I going to accomplish by writing the Shtickle Torah? I'm going to write a Torah journal. I'm going to bring you five reasons why electricity is also. So some other guy is going to write a rebuttal. He's going to say, oh, well, that reason, that rye is not such a good rye. I can argue that some Rishonim disagree with that rye. And that rye is not such a good rye. And someone's going to write a quote-unquote Shtickle Torah saying, and therefore electricity is mutter. So he said, I'm not going to write the piece because I know it's going to just lead to a mikshol. So it's important. We have that same phenomenon of Bizman Azeh. Sometimes people, you know, press Rabbanim to write certain things and to give sources and to give makaris, give hoshtikul tayrus, wise, then baldin yavav yachlok. So again, if it's something that's not resolved, if it's something that's not poshut, then it's something that requires a give and take and a masa matar, and it's up for discussion, okay? And kachi daka shatar, mechamta shatar. I give a rai, you deflate the rai, I bring another rai. That's the way psach halacha happens. But there are certain things that we already know. We know the answer already. No one today is going to come up in Tav Shaddai and Tess and write your tshuva saying, I mean, A lot of people do a lot of things, but those going to write your tshuva saying electricity is mutter. Electricity is also finished. Why it's also? Is it because of this? Because of that? Is it avara? Is it machlepatish? Is it bain? Is it mayna? I give you a half dozen reasons why it may or may not be. And each one you can give me shtickle Torah against. But at the end of the day, Nimnu v'gomu, there's no legitimate pesek in the last 100 plus years has ever presented the position of electricity as mutter and Shabbos. So in the middle of that piece, Reb Chaim Moshe writes, I'm not going to write a whole long piece in a Torah journal, but I'll write you a short tshuva. Reb Chaim Moshe must have figured no one's reading his tshuvas anyway. So I figured a short tshuva. See, today you couldn't even do that. Today, anything you put into print anywhere is automatically becomes for the whole world. But in those days, you had to read. There were no maftechas for the tshuva sachiezer. So you had to read every single tshuva. So who's going to sit and read his thousands of pages of tshuvas about it being mat regunas just to get to the one controversial line of electricity? So in the middle of the day, he tucks in a line. He writes that, everyone knows that electricity is not groma. Don't hide behind groma. Don't tell me shtickle Torah that's groma. And he quotes the Yad Raman Sanhedrin. He quotes Mamash Arsuj. He says, if you look I in Yad Raman Sanhedrin, you'll notice right away that electricity is not groma. Fine. So at the end of the day, if you want to create a device that is groma, so you have to make sure that you meet the proper criteria. So according to Rashi, it's fairly simple. According to Rashi, you just have to create a device that you press a button and nothing happens for a few seconds. Some kind of delay mechanism in there. And a few seconds later, how long that few seconds is that? No, but a little bit later, so the malacha happens, so you've built a groma device. According to the Yad Ramah, that's not enough. According to the Yad Ramah, you press a button and something happens an hour later, that's still ma'aseh b'yadayim. You have to create a device that stops your flow and then restarts its own flow. So you got to talk to the technological experts. You got to figure out how to make such a device. So whenever they talk about groma machines and groma this and groma that, groma this, so two things have to be determined. Number one, is it really groma? Are they describing something that really truly is groma, or are they describing something that, according to some opinions, is mamash ma'aseh b'yadayim? And number two, says even if it's groma that it is groma, are the circumstances sufficiently extenuating to permit the use of groma? Even if it does meet the criteria of groma, it's still not mutter to use groma. Groma is only mutter under very, very unique circumstances. Therefore,
well, the cheetahs would all know that, let's say, the tzitzis, the making tzitzis lashma, core with the machines or something like that.
Right, so that's usually, so the post could discuss that, this Gemara, in the context of the sheet, that should be okay. That means because I press the button and everything happens right away, right. So that was a big machlokes in Europe between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim. That when the matzahs first came out, when the machine matzahs first came out, so the Hasidim held that, first of all, they held it was chametz, because they held the machines weren't clean enough. So the truth is, that Nikuda they may have been right at the very beginning, the early machines were not so good. But that concern is significantly diminished as much as that. But the other issue that the Chassidish Shepelskim didn't like was, they said it's not Lishma, because pressing a button is not considered Lishma. So the Misnagdi Shepelskim, most of the Litvish Shepelskim responded, it's not true, based on what you're saying, the Kachrishon, it is considered to be Lishma, and it would be acceptable. Right in Rukhanam, it was the same kind of machlekes.
According to the Yad Ramah, is there an issue of predictability on top of everything else? For example, today I know there are Grumma devices where you press a button, you don't know when. You know within the next 10 minutes, but you don't know precisely when it's going to actually have the effect. So that sounds like we yet one more non-controllable factor.
Right. So I don't know. Right. I hear what you're saying. I know a lot of the grummas work like that. I don't know whether that would meet the criteria according to the Yadarama. I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe it would. Maybe the whole system, in a sense, shuts, so to speak, and now it picks up on its own. Maybe that's not. Maybe that is considered grum. I don't know. I'm not sure.
There are cases like with the animals where you throw a person into near an animal or something like that, so the chora there, the putter also, I think.
Right. The Gemara says it depends. The Gemara says that if I tie the person down, in front of the animal, the animal's there already. So let's say there's a lion. I take a person, tie him up, and throw him into the lion's cage. So that would be a ratzeach miyadayim. But if I throw the person into, I tie a person down, and then the lion comes later, that's called like sof chamalavo. That would be
part of it. Right. So, but yeah, the possibility of the lion coming, the lion being there and eating him, isn't a factor in his still chai misa. Whether or not the lion.
No, but
lion,
I know means I know that the lion's. I mean, the stomach has to be in a situation where I know the lion's going to eat him. The lion's. Lion's hungry. As eaten last week. I don't know. See, I'm getting too gory this discussion. Okay, we'll stick back to Shabbos clocks. All right. Anyway, so everything we've been talking about up until now has only been because we're trying to find the case of Hezekiah de Mayim. That was our original challenge. Because the Gemara said, Ve'ema mava zamayim, maybe mava refers to water. And even though in the end of the day the Gemara rejected it, but Tosfos was bothered, well, what would the case have been? Imtum Salomah, there would have been a case of Mazgah de Mayim. If it's koach rishon, so then it's biadayim, and of course you chayev. If it's koach sheni, then you potter. So Tos says no. That halacha by eskina, that's koach sheni, and the chiddush would have been if mava would have met mayim, then you would have in fact been chayev for koach sheni, unlike ritzicha. That was the havamina. Now again, when the dust settled and the gemara rejected mavzei mayim, there is no independent mazik of mayim. So then mayim goes back to regular other mazik. And therefore, it follows the regular rules of Masechet and Sanhedrin. If it's Koch Rishon, Yichayev, it's Koch Sheni, Yipoter. But everything we've been talking about is assuming that is the case. We're talking about being Mazik al Yedei Mayim, i.e., and other Mazik through Mayim. So now Tosus makes it about face, and Tosus says, you know, we're not even sure that's what the Gemara meant in the first place. The Gemara never said that. The Gemara just asks three words, Ve'ema, Mavazah, four words, Ve'ema, Mavazah, Mayim. That was all the Gemara asked. So Tosus thought that the Gemara meant Mayim, i.e. through other Mazik, but maybe not. So we take a look at the seventh of the Mamakamos. Tosus sets the stage for the end of the sugya. So Tosus says, and Abdallah obeys, Inami, Basa Denochu. Says Tosus, we have the wrong case. We're not talking about that I'm opening up dams and people are getting hurt through the water that's rushing down. We're talking about I poured water on the street. That's what it's talking about. I poured water on the street. And now, an hour later, somebody gets hurt. An animal trips, a person trips, gets hurt on the water. That is the Ve'ema Mavazeh Hamayim. So that's a big, big problem what Tosus presents. Because if that's Ve'ema Mavazeh Hamayim, why in the world do I need a new, separate, independent mazik for that? That's all the old boar. I mean, if we don't know boar by now, that's boar. I mean, we could smell a boar with it. That's a boar. A boar doesn't only mean to dig a hole. A boar means to drop a banana peel. A boar means to pour water in the street and the animal trips. The suitcase, the good old suitcase. The avonos sekirim asol, the rock, the knife, the suitcase that was left in the street. So if Tosus is now reconstructing the case that the mayim of the Eimah Mavazeh Mayim doesn't mean the water coming out of the river by removing the dam, it means simply pouring it onto the ground. So that Tosus a lot of explaining to do. So why isn't that boar? So Tosus writes, "Velo domi le boar." Tosus says, "Don't worry, I know that." Says Tosus, "I know this is the boar. I got it." Says Tosus, "But let me explain to you why this water that Chazal are discussing happens to fall short is not quite the boar that we're so familiar with." So Tosus is now going to go on to reference a very, very different kind of pouring water onto the street that is going to fall short and not going to meet the regular criteria of boar. And that's what the Gemara is potentially discussing. So hopefully, Mitzvah Shem on Friday, we have to try to figure out what in the world that case is. What is that mysterious new phantom case of spilling water that's not quite boar? They have Mavzeh Mayim. Mitzvah Shem on Friday.